Gentlemen, I want to share with you a very interesting, I saw this story today by Michal Yudelefkovitz, one of the very great Marbitzer Torah in Bnei Brak, Zichron Livracha, was just named a few years ago. And there's a following story. I don't know what you think about this. This story goes like this. Somebody offered him, he lived in this very simple and very humble flat in Bnei Brak. You know, one of those standard, very little flats in Bnei Brak. You lived in Bnei Brak, right? So somebody offered him, as I call Zatoiv, somebody offered him at one point, he had probably thousands of Talmidim over the years, thousands of Talmidim in Michal Yudah. And somebody offered him, as was being the Rosh Yeshiva, as I call Zatoiv, offered him a very nice, what's that called, for the door you hang up in your family name, what's that called? You hang it on, you put it on the door. Pardon? Yeah, plaque with your name. So somebody very fancy, like extraordinary, beautiful, and very very nice. Mishpachas Lefkovitz and everything, and he was thanked. Michal Yudah thanked very much and everything. But nice when they go home, so the children go all excited and the grandchildren, oh, we can hang this up, you know, very nice and everything. Michal said, no. I'd rather not hang it up. So they said, but why not? Like, what's wrong with it? It's a gift. Somebody gave it to you. I understand you don't want to spend money on it, but you gave it. You got it as a gift. Somebody gave it to you. There's nothing wrong with it. All it says is Mishpachas Lefkovitz. It's like, what's wrong with it? So Michal said, no. I'll tell you exactly. I'm not taking this. And I'll tell you why. Because if I'm going to get this fancy door plaque, so we're going to hang it up, I'm going to be very happy. But after a few weeks, we're going to notice that this half-broken, ancient door, you can't have this old ancient door with this fancy plaque. It clashes. It doesn't work. So what's going to happen is that you're going to say that, okay, you know, we're going to have to replace, you know, the door is anyway broken and it's anyway slanty and it's squeaky and everything. We're going to replace the door. All right, shine. So we're going to replace the door. And now the door is going to be nice because it's golden plaque, nice new door. All right. But then afterwards, we're going to notice that's going to be okay for a few weeks. But after that, we're going to notice that you can't have this door. When you walk in, the first thing you see this really, really ancient, you know, the floor is like so old and it's scratched and everything. We'll have to see that. We'll have to see the replacement of the, you can't have the door like this and a floor like that. It doesn't. And then comes the table. And then often comes the curtain. And then comes the thing. He says, eventually you get into, everything is good. And all that starting from a plaque. So he said, I'd rather not go into that. So you're going to keep black and we're going to keep it out of the, we're not going to put it onto the door, we're going to keep it out of sight. And that's what it is. I think it's a very interesting story because it shows us, what does it teach us?
To live very
simple. It comes with a, you don't even start with it.
Once you start, you can't stop.
You can't stop, that's what he said. Once you start, it doesn't stop. Right. Yeah.
Goes down as well.
I think that's a very interesting story of Michal Yudah, and I think it's definitely something to think about. Now, boys, on a very very different topic, but I was very intrigued by this, and I wonder if anybody, I'm looking at you, Jonathan, in particular, anybody's ever heard of such a thing as a. It's nothing really good to what we're learning, but I want to just. I was really really intrigued today about it. Has anybody ever heard of a chuppa in a cemetery in a Beis HaChaim?
What?
Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well.
Okay, so I'll tell you why I'm very intrigued by this. Well, I found out today, I saw in a newspaper article, like a kind of a report, which was written in 1918 in Ungvar, which is in Hungary. 1918, that's 104 years ago. There was a chuppah which took place in the Beis HaChaim in Hungary, and the officiating the rav there had a conversation. It was a discussion, and the person who represented it was my great grandfather Rav Mishkaltz, and he justified and explained it. And then what happened was that the reason for a chuppah in a cemetery was because it was during a, it was a pandemic. It was a, famously 1918 was the Spanish flu. the Spanish flu. It was known as the Spanish flu. So it was a pandemic. And so he said that my great grandfather said, the Mishkal Tov said that if it is a pandemic, then it is a skula that one makes a chuppah, especially for poor people, but not generally a chuppah in the Pesach Chaim. And the reason why one shows hope, despite the fact that there is a pandemic and especially because the Pesach Chaim is known to be not the safest place. So to make a chuppah there, it shows bitochen, emuna, hope, etc., etc. And that's why they did a chuppah in the Pesach Chaim, nonetheless. Apparently, so I read in that article, printed in 1918, it wasn't the only chuppah taking place during the Spanish flu in the Pesach Chaim. It was in Ungva, but it was in Pest, in Budapest, in other places as well. There was chuppahs taking place during pandemic. And then I said, so interesting. I looked into it, and I found that the Mekoy for that is none other than the Oizoa, which is one of the Rishonim, writes about this already. So this is a very, very... I was so intrigued by this. You know, where does it come from? And it really comes from, it is from Ozoa. This is like centuries ago, very, very reliable source. It's not like superstition or anything like that. It's a very, and I thought to myself, this is really interesting because despite all the countless scholars we heard about during the recent pandemic, which Baruch Hashem is behind us. But that's one thing, I think, we didn't hear that, did we? You didn't get any requests, a wedding and a... Fine, I thought we need to check with Jonathan, he'll know. So, okay, but apparently it was a really, really school. And what was interesting as well was, it was interesting there that he said that there was one couple, there was a previous pandemic, which was in the 1870s, and there was a couple that was, in that pandemic in the 1870s, there was a couple that got married in a Beis HaChaim, and they had such long life. The 1918, they said, it really works. They were there by 1918, chuppah. They said, it works. So they'd been married from the 1870s to 1918. They were married for, so we're talking about 30, for some 50. They were married for some 50 years. And they said, we got married in the Beis HaChaim, and we can tell you that the school works. It really works. So there you go.
Isn't it like very problematic, though? I mean, it's very disrespectful to... You know, we don't go there
with... That's right, yeah. Very good. See, that's so the Masham, so the discussion there is precisely about that point of Loig L'Rosh, and they say that you've got to do it a little bit out of the cemeteries. There must be a fence separating the chuppah with the actual Beis HaChaim.
So
because
not,
of the point they precisely...
Inside,
yeah, a little bit of that.
The car park or something.
Exactly, that's the thing. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, so we should never know about further... Yeah? It sounds like it. I don't know for sure, but it sounds like it. It sounds like it's a really ancient skula against really bad diseases. So I thought it's really interesting because we didn't hear about this, and this is really it's a mekoy musmach for that. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, going back to Hilchas Tefillin. We are up to Simon Lamed Chesi Vav. I failed to mention one point, which is brought in context of Seif Vav. We spoke about Seif Vav and Seif Zayin. Especially Seif Zayin, we discussed... Seif Zayin speaks about Choson and Bnei Achupah. Seif Vav told us about Tisha B'Av. There was one point which I failed to mention, which the Mishnah Berurah mentions over here in Seif Katan, Tezayin. Did you know that... No tefillin on Tisha B'Av. Why? Yeah, and then Avel, the contrast, Avel, that contradicts, Avelos, Tisha B'Av, that doesn't fit with Tefillin. So, the Mishnah Berurah goes a step further than that, and he says that there is an issue of crying, of Bechi, crying whilst wearing Tefillin. Mishnah Berurah towards the end, it's a long Mishnah Berurah, because if God says that at the end, he says, crying whilst the person is wearing Tefillin is a problem. Because, again, as you're saying, it's a crown. There's something very royal about the tefillin, something very majestic, something very royal about the tefillin. And that contradicts Bechi, like it contradicts Avelus, mourning. It also contradicts, you can't cry whilst wearing tefillin. Yeah, so basically what you're saying, and that's true, if a person does have the urge of crying, according to the Mishnah Berurah, a person should take it off for a few minutes and put it back on. I don't think this is so well known. Yeah, so it sounds like it. It sounds like, and I know that many very holy Yidden, you see sometimes Yidden davening very, very early, and they will cry even whilst wearing tefillin. I know. I don't know what to say about this, but the Mishnah Berurah seems to say that a person should avoid that if possible at all. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, we continue with Sif Ches. Sif Ches teaches us the following halacha: Koisvei tefillin u'mezuzois. Somebody writes tefillin and mezuzos. Somebody is a sofer. Tefillin and mezuzos. Bialocha says it's not just tefillin and mezuzos, but it will also probably include not just tefillin and mezuzos, but also what comes together normally. Yeah. Yeah. So kos for tefillin and mezuzos. It's strange that Sefer Torah is not mentioned, but it clearly means to include that as well. Hey, the sofim themselves. Vetagireyem. These are the merchants. And v'tagir tagireyem, and the merchant's agents. Okay? V'chol ha'oiskim b'melaches shemayim, and anybody who's involved and engaged with writing and sales and transactions of tefillin u'mezuzos, and sefer Torah, p'turim enochas tefillin, they are exempt from putting on tefillin. If you're selling tefillin, you're writing tefillin, you don't have to put on tefillin. Kol ayoyim, the entire day, zulas, excluding b'shas, kiyashma, v'tfila, unless the only time of obligation remains kiyashma and tfila. So, pardon? Yes, so, of course, what he means is, let's just get this clear. We are still talking about the times. The starting point of this is that people will wear tfilin the entire day. So the Shulchan Aruch is telling us, no, if you are engaged in writing or selling tefillin, then you don't have to keep your tefillin on your entire day. You only need to keep your tefillin on when you actually daven, like we do for Kiyashma and Shemoneh Esrei. So it's excluding from the obligation. It's telling us that a person who is wearing it the entire day doesn't have to wear it the entire day. Yeah, so So the answer to your question is, why don't we? Because the assumption is that we don't have Esr Chadas problem quite at that point yet. We can stretch it for until the end of davening. So Kiyashma Tefillah doesn't necessarily mean just Kiyashma Tefillah. It extends that little bit further as well. What's the background to this? What's the background to this? Rimo explains. Vimo Yitzrichim Lasois Melachtum B'Shas Kiyashma V'Tefillah. If they are engaged in their melacha, in their work during kiyashma v'tefillah, os pturim kiyashma v'tefillah tefillin to chol oisik b'mitzvah potum in a mitzvah acheres. The background to that is because they are oisik b'mitzvah potum in a mitzvah. Ve'im tzorech litroach acheres, avol im yochal asoy shtein ke'achas b'loitoch yase shtein. So what the Rambam is explaining here is as follows: that there is a rule of oisik b'mitzvah potum in a mitzvah. Those agents, those merchants, those people engaged in selling Sefer Torah, Tefillin, u'mezuzos, and certainly the ones who are writing, they're doing a mitzvah. They're doing a mitzvah. If you're writing Tefillin, you're doing a mitzvah. It's all part of a hechshem. It's all enabling Yidden to put on Tefillin. Without people writing the Tefillin, it's hechshem mitzvah. Without people writing Tefillin, person can't put on tefillin. But I think you're touching on a point we're going to get to in a minute. Yeah.
I thought that only applies when you can't do both at the same time.
Very good. So that's what the Rambam is saying. It's a machlok. It's a shonim. The Rambam said that we only say oisik b'mitzvah potam mitzvah. Oisik b'mitzvah potam mitzvah. You only say that if you're unable to do both mitzvahs. Exactly what you're saying. Yeah, that's what the Rambam says. That's what the Rambam says over here. That it's only if a person is unable to do both mitzvahs. So if a person is in theory able to... If a person is able to do the mitzvah and to keep his tefillin on, then he should do that. But again, for us lemaisa, this is not so relevant because this is only talking about, as we mentioned earlier, this is only in the times that people would wear tefillin the entire day. And nowadays, our meaning is anyway to only have tefillin for kiyashma tefillah, so it's anyway considered efshar l'kayim shneihem. The Okay, let's carry on sieve test. Yeah, let's carry on sieve test. Pardon? So what are you asking on?
He says that if you're doing one, you can do the other, unless you can do both at the same time, but everything can do both at the same time. That's why you're
on the non-writing hand, yeah. So you're asking that it's always going to be...
It's always going to be both,
that you can do the mitzvah of tefillin together with... writing and the wearing can always be fulfilled at the same time. Does everybody agree with that, Abba? It's that interesting question over here, that it's always going to be that you can do the writing I think the question is not so much on the mitzvah of I think the question is as a person as to whether a person is going to have enough concentration on his tefillin. We are putting in the same category the one who writes the tefillin together with the person who is selling the tefillin. Now imagine a person who is selling the tefillin. I hear perhaps the one who writes is not so much of an issue, but the one who is selling the tefillin, is he able to sell the tefillin and yet have sufficient concentration on the tefillin that he's wearing? Interesting, Rabbi Yisrael, we find over here a discussion, a general rule which we apply elsewhere very often with regards to Oisik Mitzvah, Potter and Mitzvah. Does Oisik Mitzvah, Potter and Mitzvah also apply if somebody gets paid? So because when we look at this person over here who's selling the tefillin, he's selling tefillin, I mean that's his panos. Would you say he's selling tefillin and because of that is Oisik Mitzvah and therefore he's exempt from all the mitzvahs? Well, he's making his living. He's making, you know, it's panosa. Oh, it's a mitzvah, potter and a mitzvah. Will you say, it will be another example for that. Let's think of applying this. Oh, it's a mitzvah, but if you are busy doing a mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. And let's say that mitzvah you're doing is a mitzvah that you're
teaching
Torah. Yeah, exactly. Very good. Good example. For those who are teachers out there, yeah? So you're teaching Torah, you're doing a mitzvah, sure you're doing a mitzvah, but you say you're exempt from other mitzvahs just because you're oh, it's your mitzvah, but not a mitzvah, it's your panasa. Yeah, so the achronim is a discussion in the bialach of the example of many achronim hold that if you're getting paid for the mitzvah, you may not qualify as oh, it's your mitzvah, but not a mitzvah. What it certainly depends on is kavon a little bit. Some people are there for the money. And if it's that's all they're thinking of the money, then it's certainly not oisik b'mitzvah, potter no mitzvah. And if the kavon is really l'shem shemaim, if the intention is that it's l'shem shemaim, then even if it gets paid, it may not matter so much. So yes, it does make a difference according to some poskim. It does make a difference as to whether a person gets paid. It does make a difference. But even more than that, according to l'achronim, the point is what his intention is, what his main agenda, his main goal in this particular activity. He probably does stop, you're right, so therefore, you should put on feeling that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, okay, it depends, yeah. Yeah. He probably does take a break, yeah. Yeah, interesting, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you did that. Emma says what you're pointing out really is what the Ramos says. Yes, but if it's Efshele Kaim Shneim, he can do both, and therefore he's taka obligated. That's really what the Ramos is saying. He's doing his daily work. Yeah, that's a good question.
He's learning all day in
Kollel. Yeah.
So is he going to have any kavanah in
civilian? Yeah. So what it sounds like, I think you're pointting out that Choshman Akuta. I think we mentioned it earlier. I think that the it gives us an indication about the awareness a person needs to have on the tefillin. It doesn't have to be so conscious.
It's like you're walking the street and you've got £10,000 in your pocket and you're doing what you're doing, but you have an awareness it's there.
Yeah.
It's gold watch.
Yeah, I think it's probably kind of... Yeah.
It's just tough or
something. Yeah, I think it's that kind of thing, yeah. Yeah, it's not a complete conscious awareness. Yeah, it's probably that kind of level, yeah. Because we did see, there's no question about it, that throughout the centuries that Yidden did wear tefillin the entire day, they worked. They worked. And as you always point out very correctly, they probably worked out in the... Some of them must have worked out in the... Yeah, and yet they were wearing tefillin. They worked for centuries. That's the way they worked. So... So it probably is a certain level of consciousness, but as you, I think your comparison is correct. But to summarize what we learned today, we mentioned the earlier Mishnah Berurah that crying with tefillin is also, we spoke about the concept of Oisek Bar Mitzvah Potter Bar Mitzvah, when people write tefillin, they sell tefillin, they're agents for tefillin, they're qualified as Oisek Bar Mitzvah Potter Bar Mitzvah, they therefore would be exempt from other mitzvahs. The Mishnah Berurah does qualify that, and he says that, well, it's certainly not if they get paid for it, and it's certainly not if their intention is for earning money. It's got to be a pure oisik bar mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah. Tomorrow, Mitzvah, we're going to be learning more about the concept of a mitzta'er, if he's in pain, if he's not fully concentrated and focused. And I also want to speak about the very interesting halacha tomorrow, Mitzvah, about a person who is taking tefillin off in front of a Talmud Chacham, in front of a Rav, what the halacha is relevant to that is. Okay? And we're also going to be discussing, Mitzvah, over the, maybe tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow, we're going to be discussing the halacha, what happens if somebody, has only money for either tefillin or mezuzahs, what's the halacha then? And okay, that's it for this evening. Good chodesh.